Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Teska remains a prisoner aboard the Osprey, now arrived in Maipur, but he has received a message offering him a chance to escape for a price. Chapter 9.
Escape? Giacomo asked in a low voice. Could be a trick.
It's possible, Teska replied in a similar volume, but I'd suspect it more if Ambrose's father or sister was on board instead of him. Ambrose isn't nearly so subtle as they are. Giacomo shrugged.
So the cabin boy be spying on Ambrose already? He be a friend of the Duke's?
Sidois chuckled before Teska could reply.
The fans have more rivals and enemies than your precious Duke has friends. This cabin boy could be working for any of them.
Teska nodded. The pirate wasn't saying anything he wasn't aware of. He shifted position to make himself more comfortable. Ambrose had lavished particular attention on Teska's left ribcage, and the bruises were extremely painful. If Ambrose hadn't cracked a rib, he'd come very close.
So, what we be doing now? Giacomo asked.
We wait, Teska said, closing his eyes.
The offer's been made, but someone has to come to us to receive our reply. He let the slow rocking of the ship draw him into a dozing reverie, dulling the pain. But he did not let himself fall completely asleep. Instead, he listened to the sounds of the ship around him and the footsteps and shouts of the crew on the decks above. Not too much time passed before he heard a change in the shouts and calls, then a dull thump along the portside hull as something bumped against the side of the Osprey.
Another ship? Giacomo asked.
Yes, Teska replied. That should be the launch from Maipur bringing Ambrose's cousin, Oryk.
He could just make out Ambrose's barking tone amid the other sounds of the ship. Though the words were indistinct, the irritation and command in Ambrose's voice was unmistakable. For a few minutes, there was no further change in the sounds coming from above. Then he heard footsteps on the deck, several sets moving purposefully in the same direction. Teska waited, mentally following their progress down into the ship.
"They be coming this way, nah?" Giacomo asked.
Teska nodded. "I think Ambrose wants to show me off."
And in short order, the footsteps passed directly over their heads, stopping at the open trap door and the short ladder that led down to this tight space.
"Go on, take a look,"
they heard Ambrose say in a voice brimming with gloating satisfaction.
"What, down there?" came a second voice, sounding older than Ambrose's and far less amused.
"Yes, down there," Ambrose replied.
There was a pause.
"Oryk," Ambrose sighed, "I'm not here to drag you back to Kohane to stand before my father. If I was, I'd have raised anchor the moment you came aboard. So go down there and take a look."
There was another pause, but a moment later a man came down the ladder, stooping to fit under the low ceiling and holding a lantern in front of him. Teska had a moment to see a tall, slender man with graying blonde hair and a thick mustache before he turned the lantern towards the cage, blinding all three captives. Behind the light, they heard the man call up to Ambrose.
"Three men. So what? If Draxon's decided to break into the slave trade, Ambrose, you can tell him I'll have no part in it."
"Oh, you won't, will you?" Ambrose snapped. "Well, lucky for you, then, that they're not slaves."
He paused for effect.
"I've caught the Duke's left hand."
"Oh, have you?"
Oryk did not sound particularly impressed. The beam of light moved, stopping on each of their faces for a moment.
"Which one is he?"
"What?"
Ambrose sputtered.
"Don't tell me you don't recognize him."
"Why should I?"
Oryk asked, sounding amused at Ambrose's reaction.
"I've never met him."
He sighed.
"I have enough to keep myself busy with here. Draxon's local squabbles aren't my problem."
"Local squabbles?" Ambrose demanded. "What happens in the Quad affects the entire family. Your father learned that to his regret, and now you get to play your little games here in his stead. Who made that possible?"
There was a moment's silence.
"I don't think I'll be hearing any more cheek from you, Oryk. It's time you remembered your branch of the family is only in the lighter fane."
Ambrose suddenly burst out laughing.
"The lighter fane? Oh, that's a good one, eh?"
"Brilliant," Oryk replied. "So, one of these is the left hand. Congratulations. I'm sure the Duke will never recover from this blow."
"Don't try to be funny, Oryk," Ambrose growled. "You're no good at it. Now, climb up out of there. We're heading back to your launch so you can take me into the city."
Oryk turned back to the ladder with some surprise.
You're keeping the ship in the bay? You do know what the orange banners mean, don't you?
Armorbacks won't bother the Osprey, Ambrose scoffed, not with all the expensive equipment Kern's setting up around the ship. But I'll have a proper meal in bed tonight, and tomorrow we can start the hunt for Grievous.
Oryk clambered up the ladder, taking the light with him. As Teska heard the Fane's footsteps pass overhead, Ambrose was still talking.
You're sure he wasn't with that group that left the Cutlass?
There were four that came ashore with Montrose, Oryk replied. None of them were Sabrians.
Teska strained to hear more, but the rest of the conversation was lost as the pair moved further away.
"Do Cutlass be in port?" Giacomo asked.
"That's what it sounds like," Teska agreed.
"And the news that some group left the ship with Montrose is a good sign as well," he thought to himself. "Don't know for sure that was Kerla and the others, but she knows she's got to keep moving. She disguised herself, of course, and if the man is strong enough, she could probably disguise Grievous as well." He smiled. "The Fanes don't know she can do that. But Oryk said four of them left the ship. Like as not, that would be Kerla, Grievous, and Wick, but who's the fourth?" The sounds on deck changed. He heard Ambrose giving orders of some sort. Then they heard the bump and scrape of men climbing down the side of the ship into the launch. There were a few more shouts and calls between the sailors. Then the Osprey's crew resumed their previous activities.
"Well," Sidois ventured, "perhaps we shall have a quiet night with that cochon off the ship."
"We best be having a quiet night," Giacomo warned. "Armorbacks be good listeners. You be making noise, they be hearing it. And they be awake at night."
Teska sighed, frustration chewing at his patience. It had been easier to endure Ambrose's treatment while they were out at sea, with no chance of rescue or escape. But now, with the city of Maipor so close, hope made his confinement harder to bear. "Like as not, I could see the Cutlass from here if I was on deck," he thought, "and Kerla might be only a day or two ahead of me on the road to the Abbey." He twisted his hands in the manacles. "I could take these off, but I can't get the cage door open, and I don't think I could get off the ship on my own anyway." If he was at full strength, he might have considered swimming to shore, but as injured and bloody as he was, Teska knew such an act was tantamount to suicide. There were almost certainly sharks in the bay, but it was the armor backs that worried him more. "More waiting," he admitted to himself, taking long, slow breaths and returning to his dozing rest. More time passed, and then there came a new set of footsteps on the deck directly above them. Teska heard a chair shift and a snort as the guard Ambrose had set near the trapdoor came awake.
"Turn around, boy. You're not allowed down here."
"I'm bringing them food and water. It was Master Fane's order," said a lighter voice Teska recognized as the cabin boy's.
Instantly, his eyes came open, his mind fully awake and alert.
"He never said anything to me about it," the guard replied through a yawn. "He'll be back tomorrow. You can bring stuff down to them then."
"And what if one of them dies during the night?" the youth demanded. "They've been at sea for 3 days. No food or water in all that time. I'm not taking the blame if one or more is found dead of thirst in the morn. That's going to be all on you."
The guard swore.
"Fine, just take the stuff down to them and come back up."
"I have to bring the empty plate and cup back," the youth objected. "Can't leave them anything they might use as a weapon. Master Fane's order."
"Fine, fine, just make it quick."
Teska saw the shadow of the cabin boy appear on the stairs, followed quickly by the person himself. After reaching up to reclaim a single plate with a half-dozen biscuits and a large flagon, he began moving toward the cages at a crouch. The youth knelt down in front of the cage, looking directly at Teska.
"I trust you read my message," he said in a low voice, barely audible.
"I did," Teska replied, moving up to the bars.
"He did not share the contents of the message with all of us," Sidois commented, moving up to the bars of his own cell.
"My message was for him alone," the cabin boy replied, giving Sidois an annoyed glance.
"Oh, was it?" Sidois replied, completely undaunted. "Perhaps I should shout to the guard that you're passing messages to my fellow prisoner. I am sure Ambrose will be most interested to hear that when he returns tomorrow."
Like lightning, Teska shot one arm through the bars between their cells and grabbed Sidois's arm, pulling him close.
"You raise your voice beyond a whisper, and I'll kill you."
"Without a doubt, monsieur," the pirate replied, "but you could not do it quickly enough to keep me totally silent, and you know it, or you would have already done so."
He looked from Teska to the cabin boy and back.
And so we are at an impasse, mes amis. Unless, he paused.
Unless what? The cabin boy asked. Unless we include him in this discussion, Teska finished.
Sidois grinned in agreement. That, and if you would pass the food and drink my way, the pirate added, that is the reason you came down here, is it not?
The cabin boy frowned and slipped the plate towards Teska under the thin space between the bottom bar of the cage and the deck. Then he set the flagon down in front of the cage within Teska's reach. Teska took a drink, while Sidois fished his good hand between the bars and snatched up two biscuits from the plate, cupping them in his maimed hand, waiting for the flagon to be passed to him. He took a long drink, handing the cup to Giacomo and making a soft belch.
Ah, a long-awaited pleasure. Now that we have supped together, we are all friends.
He turned to the cabin boy.
To whom do we have the honor of addressing?
I don't see that as information you need to know, the youth replied. You're not in a position to make such a demand. Now, do you want a chance to get off the ship or not?
Teska shook his head. I already know who you are, Yvette. One left hand should be able to recognize another, don't you think? That snapped the cabin boy's head up, his eyes wide. We didn't actually meet at His Grace's fete, but you were part of your grandfather's entourage.
Yvette,
Sidois hissed, peering more closely at the youth.
A girl?
May I present Mademoiselle Yvette Laveau, Mangoche to Baron Moliere of Hisvet. Yvette regarded him with grudging respect. Her disguise was actually quite good. She'd had a long blonde braid at the fete, but that had been cut off, leaving her with a bird's nest of spiky yellow hair that fell over her face, concealing the softer lines that suggested her true gender. Patches of false hair on her upper lip and chin completed the mundane illusion. A scrawny lad no older than 14 or 15. But Teska had been around Kerla long enough to know all the tricks of a woman disguising her gender, and he realized now that Kerla actually had an easier time of it, even without using magic. As human females went, Yvette was short and slender, but she still had curves that Kerla lacked, and those necessary concealments left signs if one knew what to look for.
Left hand? Giacomo asked. She be like you.
He held up his hands and mimicked fighting with two blades, even making quiet whit-whit noises to emphasize his point.
No, Yvette hissed, her free speech shifting to a Hisvetian accent. I was trained to stay hidden. You, on the other hand, parading around in the open with those ridiculous sabrian blades. How you ever get anything done for your duke is beyond me.
I wonder that sometimes myself, Teska said with a sigh, taking a biscuit off the plate and eating it. So, what brings the Baron's left hand on board the Osprey? Yvette set her mouth in a stubborn line and said nothing.
Actually, I believe I know, Sidois replied with a grin. There are rumors among my fellow Loups de la Mer that Draxen Fane has been pursuing stronger ties with some of the captains who operate off the coast of Hisvet.
Indeed, Teska said, smiling at Yvette. The Baron wouldn't like that, would he? He's quite jealous of the relationship between himself and his tax collectors. Yvette frowned, then shrugged.
My orders were to identify which captains Draxen is wooing to his side, she admitted. I had already secured a position as cabin boy when the Osprey began rapid preparations to take to sea. I believed that the Fanes had arranged a rendezvous with some of those captains in some neutral territory, like Le Morganton or Nalos. But instead, it seemed like they couldn't make up their mind where the Osprey was going. First, Kern had orders to sail for Nalos, then Draxen cancelled that order just as we were casting off. A day later, we leave Cohen with new orders. Head for Maipo, best possible speed. Since then, I've realized that this voyage has nothing to do with my mission. It's just another move in Draxen's endless game with Duke Stephen.
She gave Teska an exasperated look, as if all this was his fault.
It all revolves around this Captain Grievous, that Sabri and Draxen has the bounty out for. Ambrose has talked about little else since we left Cohen.
She snaked one hand under the bars and pulled the empty plate back. Teska tipped back the flagon, catching the last drops of water before giving that back to her as well. Yvette tilted her head, listening for a moment.
It sounds like your guard's fallen asleep again, but I won't push my luck and stay much longer. Here's the deal. You know how Ambrose talks, especially when he's drunk.
You should assume I've heard everything he said since he came on board, and you know I've been reading all the messages he's been sending to his father. So, if you want to get out of this cage, you'll tell me what is going on, and it had best match everything I already know."
Teska raised an eyebrow. Out of this cage, or off this ship? They're not the same thing.
Yvette smiled. Oh, we're getting off the ship.
You're coming with us?
She nodded. I wouldn't dare stay aboard once Ambrose finds you gone, and whatever the Fiends want this badly is something my lord will want to know about. I'm coming with you, at least until we get into the city. Deal?
Deal, Teska replied. The price was steep, but fair. Teska wouldn't have asked for less if the situation had been reversed. All right, the Fiends are chasing Grievous because he has half of a map that leads to the secret haven of Praetoris Rex. The sight of three mouths simultaneously dropping open made him smile. Sounds far-fetched, I know, he went on, but it's the truth. Sidois made a sound somewhere between a cough and a laugh.
Old Rex's treasure. That legend never dies. So, now it's on my paw.
We don't know, Teska admitted. Grievous is going to the Abbey of St. Ravino to see if the monks have anything in their archives that matches his part of the map. As Sidois nodded, digesting this new information, Teska turned back to Yvette. Any other questions? She studied him for several seconds, then shook her head.
None that I'm going to take the time to ask now. All right, be ready to move after sunset. I suppose all four of us are going.
I'm not leaving Giacomo behind, for the same reasons you're not staying, Teska replied. She gave him a grim smile in response, then glanced at Sidois.
And you? You'll do everything in your power to give us away unless we bring you as well, won't you?
Sidois actually managed to look hurt.
Oh, mademoiselle, say rather that you could not bear to leave even one of us behind in Ambrose's care. Such a kindness as that can only be the gracious gift, blessed in the daughter's eyes, and I can do nothing but offer my full cooperation in return.
Yvette and Teska shared a look. He could be of use getting off the ship, Teska suggested. He turned to Sidois. But you're on your own once we reach land.
Agreed, mon ami.
Teska nodded before turning back to Yvette. What's your plan?
I'm assembling it as I go, she admitted, though the basic framework is in place. Four of us complicates matters. It would have been easier with two or three, but the details will have to wait until nightfall.
Why? Sidois demanded.
She flashed him an irritated look.
Because Kern is currently making arrangements for keeping the Osprey anchored in the bay, and until I know exactly what those are, I won't know which details I can exploit.
She rose from her crouch, taking the plate and goblet with her.
I have to get back. Even if the guard's still asleep, others will be looking for me. Kern, for one, but I'm more worried about Garrick Cabot.
Teska frowned. Ambrose didn't take Garrick into my poor with him?
Would you? She asked, shaking her head. I think half the reason Ambrose left as quick as he did was to get away from that dead-faced brute. I'll be back sometime after dark. Be ready to move.
Then she was climbing up the trap door, startling the guard awake once more. A moment later, they heard her light footfalls on the deck overhead. Sidois chuckled.
How interesting, he yawned. But after such a refreshing meal and delightful conversation, I think I will turn in.
Then he looked at Teska.
Actually, monsieur, may I ask you a question?
You may, Teska replied. I'll not give any promise of an answer. The old pirate nodded.
Old Rex's treasure. I did not hear belief in your voice when we spoke of it.
Belief? Giacomo asked.
When a man believes something, Sidois said, truly believes it, you can hear it in his voice. For example, when our friend here said that he would kill me if I did not cooperate, there was belief in those words. I knew he would do exactly as he said he would. But when he just spoke of old Rex's treasure, that belief was absent.
He gave Teska a curious smile.
You do not believe the treasure exists, yet you pursue it. Why?
Teska shrugged. The Fiends believe it. Would you want them to have that sort of wealth if it does exist?
Sidois grinned. Ah, no, I would not. Draxon Fane is annoying enough as he is.
My lord feels the same way. Giacomo looked confused.
You'll be knowing truth when it be spoken.
Sidois shook his head.
Oh, no, truth and belief are not the same thing, not at all. My father was a scale priest, hearing the call of the father, who balances the son's wrath and the daughter's love with his wisdom. I grew up listening to the old man quote the Book of the Triad, and with each word I could hear his belief, strong and free of doubt.
Your father be a priest, and you be a pirate?
Giacomo asked, incredulous.
The pirate smiled. A more common situation than you might think. It took less than a day away from home to learn that my father's belief was not the truth of the world. But I still recognize the tone of conviction, the look in a man's eye when he believes what he is saying. Whether it is actually true, that is another matter entirely.
So you believe the treasure exists? Teska asked the pirate.
Sidwa chuckled. Pirates do not hoard wealth, we spend it. The sheer cost of keeping a ship afloat, you've no idea. And any remaining coin not spent on repairs and resupply is divided equally amongst the crew at the end of the cruise. This is the oldest tradition of the Loup de la Mer, as close a thing to written law as we will ever have, Triad willing.
You no be getting more coin than one of your crew?
Giacomo asked. Carol explained this to me once, Teska commented, smiling as he remembered how solemnly she had treated the subject. The officers usually get 2 shares each. The captain gets 3.
I take 5, Sidwa corrected. I have a certain reputation for success. Those who sail with me are willing to accept a smaller percentage of a larger haul.
He frowned at the cage he was in, then sighed.
I will have to lower my rate once word of this gets out. The point is, all division of the spoils happens at the end of the cruise. Any captain who tried to hold back some portion of that would be thrown overboard.
He grinned at Teska.
So, why would I believe that Predatoris Rex left a vast treasure trove out there?
I don't know, Teska said, grinning back. But you do. His smile widened at the pirate's sudden scowl. You're not the only one trained to hear such things in a man's voice. After a moment, Sidwa gave Teska a grudging nod.
You are correct, monsieur. I do believe.
Giacomo was confused.
But you'll be saying that no captain be hiding treasure from his crew unless he be wanting to be swimming with the sharks.
Predatoris Rex, Sidwa began after a pause, was the exception to the rule, to all the rules.
He paused again, lost in thought. Then he yawned and arched his back.
But I find my eyelids beginning to droop. I shall rest my eyes until dark.
He looked at Teska.
Triad be praised to be in the company of such true friends who can work together for mutual benefit.
Teska nodded. There was no point trying to pry more out of the pirate now, and getting some rest for the night ahead was a good idea. Sleep soundly. I'll be doing the same. Sidwa gave him a sly smile, then leaned against the back of his cage and closed his eyes. Giacomo, you should try to get some rest as well.
Giacomo no be sleeping, the islander muttered. Too many thoughts be bouncing around in his head. Old Rex's treasure, more left hands than any man be used to, and armor backs below us?
He smiled at Teska, though his grin was but a shadow of its former self.
You'll be wishing for my paw, and we be in my paw. You'll be wanting a way off the ship, and bam!
He made a silent clapping gesture with his hands.
A boy be turning into a girl, and she be offering you a way.
He nodded sagely. The winds still be keeping you safe.
They be keeping you safe, too, Teska said. Then he chuckled. Giacomo's dialect was contagious. You're locked in a cell, tired and hungry. But you're healthy, you've still got both of your hands, and we have a chance to escape ahead of us. Even if you can't hear them right now, your winds are keeping you safe as well. Giacomo chuckled, and Teska thought the islander's melancholy had diminished somewhat.
Maybe Giacomo only be safe because he be near you, nah?
The islander shrugged.
We be finding out one way or other, most like.
He sat up as straight as he could under the low ceiling.
You be resting now, Windmaster. Giacomo be keeping watch until dark.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.